You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'm your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, Scott, this will be episode 428.
Woo!
Oh, yeah, 428.
I've been watching Ric Flair promos all afternoon.
Woo!
Yeah. Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ric Flair, man. He's awesome.
Yep, getting me in the mood to podcast.
You know, we haven't had an episode for a couple of weeks. I was actually out of town, but one of the last things that me and you did was we went and saw Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah.
At the, what I'm going to call the Cowboy Hall of Fame.
The technical name for it is the National Western Heritage Museum and Cowboy Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so like...
He was inducted...
Yeah, did you see he donated his father's hat to the Cowboy Hall of Fame, is what he called it?
Oh, no, I didn't know that, but...
Yeah.
He was inducted into the... So the Cowboy Hall of Fame, or the National Western Heritage Museum, is a museum here in Oklahoma City. I'm a member of it. I mean, I get an annual membership every year.
Thank you.
It's dedicated to preserving... Western art is a big thing. They have a lot of Western art there. They also have Western artifacts, and they also have an area that's dedicated towards preserving Western, I'm going to call it Western performers, particularly motion pictures. So it has a lot of actors and actresses in it. And Kurt Russell was inducted into that, into the Western, I think it's like the Western Performers Hall of Fame or something like that.
But his dad was
his also. Dad was also his dad's what's his dad's name?
Well, I know his real name, but he goes by Bing.
Bing, that's right, Bing Russell. And so as part of that, Kurt Russell was there. He received an award. There were three events. One of them was kind of a mixer on a Friday. There was a talk that he did on Saturday, and then there was a black tie thing on Saturday night. You and I went to the talk.
Yeah, so, you know, we went to that, and then later on I read that he brought his father's hat. His father played the sheriff on Bonanza.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Or a deputy or something on Bonanza.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize
And I've
that.
Seen a lot of Bonanza. I don't really recall his dad or who the deputy of the sheriff was on Bonanza. But anyway, I saw where he donated his father's Bonanza hat to the museum, and it's their first piece of
memorabilia
is a good word, from Bonanza, so I guess they're happy to get it.
Well, they do have an area, so there's an area in the museum, we'll call it, there's a gallery that is dedicated to, it has kind of a timeline of Western movies, and then it goes into television also, and there's a good-sized section of that, probably about a fifth of that, is dedicated to Bonanza. It's got portraits and pictures
cool.
from some of the people.
Yeah.
But
Lorne Greene
and some of the other people. So they'll probably put that hat in there, and that will...
No, that's pretty cool because it's like the Ric Flair robe. It's like, you know, he's got this hat.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's he going to do with the hat?
Yeah.
It belongs in a museum, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to donate it. It's like we talked about the Ric Flair robe a few episodes back.
Right. Right.
What do you do with this robe? Well, maybe it should be in a museum somewhere, you know?
So yeah, I mean, that's the thing is if he gives it, since he gave it to the museum, he
not
knows.
Not
going to
be lost.
Yeah, well, it won't be lost. It won't get damaged. You know, the museum will take care of it.
I think it's pretty cool.
Forever.
Well, next
you know.
Time we go, I'm going to go check out that hat.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was cool to see him there. Unfortunately, there was not. It was not an autograph signing thing. And I got the impression somebody asked, and I think he signed something for them, but
Well, it's for a little kid.
It was for a little kid. I don't think he was signing any autographs. Maybe if you caught him as he was leaving in the right mood.
Yeah, possibly.
But we were not in the position to get it. Hearing him talk was great. You know, there are very few actors that I really give much of a crap about. He's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Yeah, so I was wanting to watch Bone Tomahawk after he talked about it. Briefly.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hadn't seen it. At least I don't think I've seen it. Anyways, I was trying to watch it, and I searched all the movie channels.
It used to be on Prime.
Well, I couldn't find it. You had to rent it. I couldn't find you could watch it. So I was kind of looking around what I could watch, and couldn't find it, but I ended up going to Disney. Not that I thought it was on Disney, but I ended up going to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at what movies he has on there. I ended up watching The Computer
War
Tennis Shoes.
That's funny.
Have you watched this?
I have not seen that. So, hang on.
But here's the deal.
Let's talk about Kurt Russell's career.
Well, hang on 1 second. So, what I wanted to bring up is the moderator of the panel.
Yeah.
The guy that was asking all the questions and told old stories was, and I don't remember the guy's name, but he was a buddy of Kurt Russell's from back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, they'd been in, like, 3 movies together. They had actually shared an apartment together.
Yeah.
Kind of grew up together. Like, you get the idea this guy was, like, is still a buddy of his.
Yeah.
So I'm watching The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, and I see the guy. He's in the movie.
Well, didn't they say that guy was in every Disney movie that Kurt Russell was in?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know how many Kurt Russell was in. But Kurt Russell told basically the story of his life. I knew about him, but I didn't know he was that successful as a kid. I knew he did Disney stuff. I didn't know he headlined some show that whatever.
No, yeah, where he was the young child actor in a Western.
Yeah, there was some Western where he was the main actor in it.
Yeah, and then Charles Bronson came along.
Yeah.
He stole the limelight, and his dad was going to go fight somebody for it.
Well, no, what happened is his dad took him down to San Diego, and he didn't show up for his camera call. And so they called the agent, and the agent was like, he's not coming back until you give him the thing, you know, because his dad knew they couldn't do the show without him because the show was named after him.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to hear all that. He completely skipped over the stuff that we, you know.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, he only talked the Disney stuff just because it was like early on in his career.
That was pretty quick.
Yeah, how he got going. But he talked about his Westerns he was on as a kid. And he talked about how his dad was like a Western actor. And there's a child role came up, and his dad asked him if he wanted to do it, and he didn't really care about it, but he's like, how much am I going to get paid for it?
Yeah.
And I remember he said, $110 would be your daily fee. He only wanted to do it for one day so he could buy him and himself and his sister a bicycle.
Yeah, there were some bicycles that him and his sister won, and they're $75 a piece, and his dad told him, if you do it for one, you'll get $150 a day, and so he decided to do it so that he could, and he bought him and his sister a bicycle with his money.
Yeah, and so that kind of got him to be an actor. I thought that was pretty cool. And then it went to the Disney stuff. And
he also talked about when he was a kid, there were always stuntmen at the house.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently his dad was kind of a tough guy also. I don't know if he did a lot of his own stunts or whatever. And so he was kind of around stuntmen growing up, and they taught him how to do a bunch of stuff, including how to ride a horse, and he said he was licensed to drive a stagecoach. He said like the youngest person in like at, what do you say, 15 or something, 13 or something crazy. He had to be licensed to drive a stagecoach. I don't know if it was a movie thing or just generally.
You know, it sounded like just generally, like people were still running, driving horse and buggies on the street maybe.
Well, or maybe at amusement parks or whatever, but
yeah. It was kind of an odd.
Yeah, and he was talking about he flipped one. You know?
Yeah, he tried to get out of the rut and it wouldn't come out of the rut, so they all had to jump off and to bail off.
Yeah, and didn't he say it bounced or it would have crushed him or something?
He jumped one way and the one guy
fell. Or no, maybe it was the other guy.
One guy kind of fell under it, but it rolled over the top of the guy without the guy getting hit. Like it kind of flipped over the guy.
It could have crushed him. That's right. Kurt Russell jumped to the free side, but he thought he'd killed the other guy because it rolled that way.
Yeah.
But
they had some good stories, and the moderator kind of kept it going with the stories, and there were a few questions asked. What do you think, about 4 or 5? Not many.
Yeah, not very many, because he kind of went off. The thing I told my people at work, I was telling them about it, and I said, somebody was there from the city of Tombstone.
Oh, that was great.
And they said...
That story was awesome. That whole thing was awesome.
They said, you know, we're celebrating whatever of the...
The 30th anniversary.
Well, it wasn't it was the gunfight, not the movie. Or was it the movie?
Well, no, they were bringing all the actors back on the
30th
anniversary.
Oh, that's right,
movie.
For the 30th anniversary. And he goes, well, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah, it was like, well, we had a 20th. This is a guy from Tombstone, Arizona. He's like...
Yeah, driven to Oklahoma City or flown or whatever.
Some guy that puts together whatever for Tombstone.
And came then, here because Kurt Russell's going to be here.
And when they had the 20th, he said, when we had the 20th reunion and all the cast came out, you were in Europe, you couldn't do it. We're going to have a 30th one coming up. Can you do it? Nope, I won't be there.
Yeah, nope, no, I won't be here. No, didn't tell him what date it was. Just no matter what, flat out refused to do it.
I will not be there.
I will not be there.
That to me was one of the funny. You know, I told my wife about it. I said, you know, he's a super likable guy. He's always got this grin on his face. He comes out real quick, like with his stories. He wins the whole crowd over. So yeah. No matter what he says, the crowd's going to be with him. And when he did that, I didn't take it as an ass move. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, he would. You got the impression. Well, he doesn't live in Hollywood. He lives in Colorado. You got the impression he doesn't want anything to do with.
Yeah, if he's not doing a movie, he goes back home.
Yeah. His thing is raising cattle and making wine or whatever he did.
Yeah, that's what he said. He does wine also. And then, you know, also I was thinking, like, well, why would he come to Oklahoma? But I guess this thing is big enough to where, because of his dad.
I think his dad may have sweetened the pot a little bit.
Because of his dad. I think if his dad wasn't getting in and if his dad wasn't a big Western actor, I don't think he'd give two craps about it. Personally,
maybe the way he talked about Tombstone, I felt like that he may have had a connection to Westerns.
Well, and then also he talked about Tombstones. This is something that people, I didn't know this, but the script of Tombstone was way better than the movie because they had to cut out so much of it.
Yeah, he said there was a lot. It was cut
like
out.
He said it was like one of the best scripts he's ever written, but
did he write it or somebody else write it?
I thought somebody else had wrote it, but. Either way, yeah. It was like a really great script, and he goes, yeah, the movie's great, but it's not what, it would have been so much better, supposedly.
Well, and he talked about, you know, he was not listed as the director. There was another guy that was listed as the director, but the original director kind of crapped out, and Kurt Russell recommended this guy, and he said early on it was apparent this guy was not up to the task, and so Kurt Russell kind of stepped in to help him, and he swore to that guy. I read this somewhere else, I think. He swore to the guy that he would not tell anyone until after that guy was dead. And that guy, he didn't. He didn't tell anyone that he directed until after that guy died.
Oh, I didn't know this. Wow, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I read an article about him that was talking that. But no, the thing that I like was, I don't know if it was that guy or somebody else was asking him about what he thought about the Earps and the Clantons and who he thought, what he thought, you know, and Kurt Russell's guy kind of talked about some different books that were about it. So Kurt Russell apparently is well read on the subject of the gunfight. And this guy was talking about a book or Kurt Russell was, kind of, I think he was like dismissive of a particular book. And this guy goes, oh, well, that author's died. Or that guy, the guy that wrote it has died. And Kurt Russell kind of goes, well, happens to all of us.
Well, and then also he was talking about, this is what I took away from that conversation with those two guys, was there was two different newspaper accounts of what happened, and one was kind of
pro
this side, one was kind of pro that side, and Kurt Russell's like, you know, unless you're like going back to the future and you go back and watch it, you don't know who shot first and what was really going on, and one guy stood there, and he never got shot, but he never moved. The other guys were all ducking and stuff, all got shot.
Right.
He was telling how this all, like, clearly he thought about this quite a bit. And whatever the one guy was trying to get him to say, Kurt Russell wasn't really going with it. He's like, yeah, who knows what happened, you know.
Right. Because
I think that guy was kind of wanting to say, oh, yeah, they started it.
Yeah, he was kind of pushing for an answer, but Kurt Russell was.
Unless you're there, who knows what really happened.
Yeah, who knows. It's funny, you watched The Computer Wars Tennis Shoes. I watched Tombstone. Tombstone's on Amazon Prime.
I need to watch that. I've seen it. I need to watch it again. I'm not a big Val Kilmer fan is the problem.
Oh, yeah. But he plays a big part in it.
I know, but I will watch it again. Thanks for saying that. I got to say, though, The Computer Wars Tennis Shoes, it's it was like 69 or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's late 60s, I think. You know, in your mind, you're thinking, this has got to be pretty crappy. I actually liked it a lot. I thought it was pretty good.
Disney does some solid live action stuff.
There was some
back in the day they did.
There was a couple hokey things.
They're hokey, but
a couple hokey things. But for the most part, I really liked that movie a lot. I mean, I'm not dissatisfied with it. I thought it was kind of like an hour and a half or something, you know.
Yeah, Michelle and I have been watching a bunch of stuff on Disney Plus. We've been trying to work our way through. We're going to Disney World in a few weeks. And so we're kind of working our way through some of the old animated stuff that we hadn't seen. And we've watched some of the stuff on Disney Plus, and then we have a lot of stuff. But I think their live action stuff is pretty solid. One of my favorite, of course, you know, everybody likes 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I like, even though it kind of gets.
You had the thing hanging up there, right?
Yeah, I had the thing hanging up there. That was from the ride, though.
Where'd that go?
I think it's in the closet.
Oh, gotcha.
When I got that, I had a poster for the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride at Disneyland. The one at Disneyland, the submarine ride, was themed after 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Island at the Top of the World, I like that. It gets kind of panned a little bit.
At the Top of the World, I don't think I've seen it.
I thought you and I watched it one time.
I don't recall it.
They take that blimp to the top of the Top of the World. They find like
the Himalayas or something.
Yeah, something like that. And they I think they go to the North Pole because they find a bunch of like Nordic type people living up there.
If we've seen it, I don't recall it. But
yeah, okay. The blimp they're flying is this weird shaped blimp. But the one that I like is Blackbeard's Ghost. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, I think I might have a long time ago.
I think it's Peter Ustinov that plays the ghost.
You know, when I was a kid, the big ones were those Escape from Witch Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I can't stand those. I mean, maybe I'd watch it now and think something differently, but I remember there was two of them.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't
take it. Escape and Return. And then there was a newer one with The Rock.
I couldn't. Well, please. I couldn't. Those would be like, if I watched everything on Disney Plus, those would be the last two I'd watch probably.
Oh, yeah.
You know? At least live action. There's probably some animated
stuff. Oh, I bet there's probably some live. What is it? Sinbad or no? Is it this Kazam or whatever?
I don't even count stuff like that.
Shaq. Kazam.
I don't count any of that. But.
Yeah.
Anyways, I just wanted to bring up that Kurt Russell thing. I thought it was pretty cool.
No, the Kurt Russell thing was cool. I was hoping he'd talk about Escape from New York, but there was clearly not time.
I was hoping that we could get a Jack Burton, some kind of Jack Burton thing.
At least he mentioned Escape from New York. He didn't even mention Big Trouble in Little China at all.
Yeah. No, he didn't. But
or The Thing.
Or even, you know.
But it went a long time.
Even Ego the Living Planet.
Yeah, did not mention Ego the Living Planet. But it was cool, you know, to see him.
He still has that. Would you call it a coif? The hair?
Oh, yeah.
The hair's like. He didn't have that in the Computer Wore Tennis Shoes. I don't know exactly where he got that look at, but he's been rocking that look for quite some time.
Did you see the picture? There was a picture. Let's see if I can find. Oh. He's been to the Cabaret Hall of Fame before.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see that?
He's got the same. Look at the hair.
75. Yeah, his hair's about the same.
Yeah. I saw that photo.
He's looking at. I think that's Lauren Green. He's looking.
I saw that photo. I'm like, holy crap! He's been here before. That was amazing.
Yeah.
In the 70s, he would have been like what, like 25 or something, maybe something like that. Yeah. But anyway.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But anyway, yeah. So. So that was the thing we did.
Yeah, good times, man.
Good times. Good times are had by all.
I've been reading quite a bit. I got some books and stuff. You got anything to talk about?
Yeah, I got something to talk about. So recently, you and I and a couple other people went and saw The Batman, which is now on HBO.
Oh, I need to watch that again.
We talked about it on the show.
Oh, yeah.
We went to an early showing, and at our showing, we got buttons when we went in, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, not something you get all the time when you go see a movie, but also, ours started, and there weren't any trailers for our movie.
Yeah. No,
there were no previews, except for...
Well, we went to Sneak Peek, though. It was a Sneak Peek.
We saw it on a Wednesday, wasn't it?
Right, yeah.
And but there was a trailer for Warner Brothers movies, yeah. And they showed not trailers, but they showed clips from several movies that are coming out. And it was all their movies for 2022, I believe.
They're superhero movies.
The DC Universe movies had and it, at one point it listed them, and it was the Batman. It was
Black Adam. Flash.
The Flash. What was the other? There was
Aquaman 2.
Aquaman 2. So I think it was the 4.
I think that was it. Yeah.
So I saw when they showed that, they showed quite a bit of previews for The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Did you recognize any of that, what was going on?
I didn't even pay attention to it. I don't really care for The Flash that much.
Okay.
I think they're getting rid of all it, though, right? Because of the actor?
Well, hang on. So I recognize it immediately as they were adapting the Flashpoint miniseries. Have you read that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Who wrote that? Johns?
Jeff Johns wrote it.
Okay.
So, so I was like, I should read that. I have it. And so I was like, I should read that. I've read it. I was like, I ought to read that again. And I recognized they were adapting it. Now, what's come out recently is the actor apparently is just a horrible person that just assaults people constantly or has a history of being arrested.
The funny thing is they've got a good TV act. They should use the same damn guy.
It's funny you say that. I've watched... I don't know who this person is. I don't know anything about this guy.
The movie guy, you mean?
The movie guy. Yeah. I haven't watched the Flash TV show. I don't know who that guy is. I don't know who either one of these actors are. I don't know anything about them. I just know... I saw the preview for it. I'm like, oh, they're adapting Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's cool. I'm looking forward to that because I like that story. Then I hear Ezra Miller's been arrested in Hawaii and you know, Warner's cutting ties with him or thinking about it or whatever. And then you told me, oh, they need to have the actor do it, the TV guy do it.
The TV guy's good.
You know what's crazy?
I've seen him in some stuff.
Well, you know what's crazy? I've been reading stuff about it. And literally, like, in people's minds, they're like, nope, he's a TV actor, not a movie actor. There's, like, some kind of weird divide that they don't let TV actors...
They try not to, that's for sure.
It's crazy. I mean...
If you look at the TV guy, he looks like more like you'd think a guy should look.
Yeah, well, looking at news accounts come out, and they're, of course, dragging out pictures of him dressed all crazy and stuff. And, you know, anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen with that. They were talking about maybe delayed till 2023. It may get a reshoot. Who knows? I'm honestly kind of disappointed. I don't care about that guy. I don't care who they have as an actor. I like the storyline. The storyline's cool. So I read it again recently, and not only that, but I watched there's an animated version of it.
Okay.
The animated version, it's available on HBO Plus,
mm-hmm.
HBO Plus, HBO Max, whatever it's called.
Max, sure.
It's called Flashpoint Paradox, and it's a pretty straight adaptation of it, of the book. And I didn't realize this. I did a little research. Apparently, this was like a big crossover, this Flashpoint. And so what I have for the listeners is I have what's called the Flashpoint Unwrapped, which the Unwrapped is DC does these books that are shot off of the pencils. They're uninked, and I've got like a Hush, and I've got Jim Lee, JLA, I've got a Greg Capullo, I got the Court of Owls, Batman. There's a couple of these. At one point, Barnes & Noble Online had a deal. If you bought two, you got one free.
That's cool.
And I had a gift card. I bought two, and so I wanted to get a third one, and I didn't know which one to get. And the way that I bought, of course, the one you get for free is cheaper and all. And anyway, there wasn't really anything else that I wanted at the time or by any artist I wanted. So I got this one. Not a huge. It's written by Jeff Johns, drawn by Andy Kubert. Not the hugest Andy Kubert fan, but I kind of like The Flash. Years ago, I read The Flash pretty regular. But the thing about The Flash is, and I like The Flash as a character. You know, we had a friend who was a huge Aquaman fan, Scott Cosby. If I was going to be a DC fan, I would probably be a Flash fan. I like the character, man. I think it's cool power, you know. I think it's a cool character. So, Flashpoint is like considered like the big Flash arc, and it was a crossover. There were issues of all the DC books that tied into this. It wasn't just in Flash. It was, let me see if it says how many issues it went on. I want to say it was like 7 issues, maybe? No, I don't think this is 7. Yeah, no.
Those pencils look pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. Andy Kubert's solid. Both the Kuberts, all the Kuberts are pretty good.
Well, Joe's on another level, but yeah.
He was solid. Anyway, but Flashpoint, apparently, I didn't know this, Flashpoint was like the lead-up into the New 52. It's the story that launched the New 52.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Completely didn't realize it. So the story, I'll give you the bare bones of the story since you haven't read it and don't care about it.
I 100% have not read that.
Okay. It starts off, Barry Allen wakes up. He's at his desk at the police station. He's asleep. They're like, hey, wake up, Barry. He's like, what's going on? They're like, hey, Susan, there's a commotion at Susan Cold Museum. He's like, Susan Cold? And he's like, okay. And so he's going to leave, and he's going to run down some stairs, and he looks, and he's going to shoot out his, you know, his ring has his costume in it.
Right.
He's going to run down some stairs, shoot out his ring, get in his costume, and go down there and check it out. He looks, and he's missing his ring. Just close up of his hand, no ring. He gets to the stairs, and he, like, falls down the stairs. And he hears somebody go, Barry, are you okay?
But he can still run without his costume on, can't he?
Well, that's the thing. So he hears somebody holler at him. It's his mom. And he's like, Mom? And she's like, are you okay? Did you hurt yourself? He goes, no, I'm fine. One of the big things, I know this about Barry Allen, is when he was a kid, his mom was killed. And apparently, he always kind of blamed himself for it through the circumstance. And now all of a sudden his mom is alive. And so he's like, "What? You know, what's going on?" She goes, did you hit your head? No. She's like, well, we were supposed to go to lunch, you know. And he's like, he's trying to figure out what's going on. Something, and he realizes he can't run fast. Something is wrong, okay? He's lost his super speed. And he doesn't have his costume. His mom is alive.
So since his mom's alive, he never got struck by lightning in the lab?
Something's going on. He didn't know what's going on. So he decides after he's going to go, his mom leaves. He's going to go see his wife.
Iris.
He goes by her work. He's talking to her, trying to talk to her. She doesn't know him, and her husband comes up. And starts about, so his wife, he's not married, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. So he realizes things are not right. Whatever's happened to him, things are not right.
Parallel universe or something.
So he goes to Wayne Manor, and he gets into the Batcave. And Batman sees him and captures him. It's like, what are you doing? Who are you? Why are you here? And he's like, Bruce, we know each other, you know, something's going on. What's going on? We need to talk. I got to figure out what's going on. And he's like, what are you doing talking about Bruce? How do you know Bruce? He figures out that Batman is not Bruce Wayne. Batman is Thomas Wayne, his father. In fact, it is Bruce Wayne who was killed by the robber in the alley. And so he figures out that he's in an alternate universe.
Did he fall asleep? Because he can vibrate. Did he vibrate into another universe when he's asleep or something?
Well, he has to figure out how to get back to his other, to the right thing. Also, another thing that's going on is the Amazons, led by Wonder Woman, have taken over England, and they're threatening to take over the world. They're at war with the Atlanteans, and the Atlanteans are threatening to take the whole world. Is at war right now. There's just chaos. Batman is kind of rogue. Superman is nowhere to be seen. They don't know where Superman's at. They don't know anything about Superman. He's like, "Where's Superman?" They don't know anything about Superman. The main good guy, Batman, is like a vigilante that everybody hates. The main good guy is Cyborg. And Cyborg kind of leads like the Justice League, such as it is, which is a bunch of people I'm unfamiliar with, except for Shazam is on there. But instead of being like Billy Batson, it's like a whole team of little kids that talk. Let's say the word, they get combined to all become Shazam or Captain Marvel. Anyway, the way that it all unravels is cool. At one point, he figures out that he's got to get his powers back. And so he reproduces the experiment, which was he was messing with some chemicals that got struck by lightning, and that's how he got his power. So him and Batman attempt to do that and about kills him.
You know, Batman's like sabotaging it.
Yeah, Batman's like, I always hated that guy.
He broke in the Batcave.
Exactly. But
he's talking about my dad's son.
Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with the movie. Dude, if they end up making the movie, it'll be really cool. I mean, because there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on in the series. If they don't make the movie, I'd watch the animated movie or get the book. The book is really good, too. Like I said, I reread the book just recently, and then I watched the animated thing. There's the Flash after he gets lightning, after the first attempt. He's all bandaged up.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, right here. You're out of your mind. Lie down and let the morphine take effect. No! You're lucky to be alive. You have third-degree burns over 75% of your body. And so, anyway, but yeah, that is something that I've been week or so, I've been reading that. Because like I said, I saw that they were coming out of the movie, and I was like, oh, this will be cool.
Well, cool.
It's Flashpoint.
The only time I watch The Flash is if it crosses over on one of the other CW shows I've watched, and I don't really watch it on the regular or anything. But the guy they got on TV it plays and looks like he could be The Flash. He looks like a decent looking guy. Could be The Flash, whatever. Should be the guy they use in the movies. Instead, they got this other guy, and apparently he's a
psychopath.
Tool. Yeah, he's a tool. Just get rid of him. Put the TV guy in. I don't get it.
You know, it's interesting you say that because a lot has been made lately about this Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing.
Oh my gosh!
And I mean, I don't care about any of that because I don't care about celebrities except for Kurt Russell. But it is interesting because you hear stories about this Ezra Miller, and then you hear stories about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, and how he's a raving lunatic and she's a raving lunatic and somebody cut off one of his fingers and
yeah.
God knows what else went on and
he's like he wasn't his tool.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the I feel like celebrity just makes people crazy.
You get Will Smith slapping people around.
Exactly.
Cussing people out from the audience.
I think celebrities tend to get kind of... I think that...
Well, they have no real grip on like what reality is. Like, they don't have to go get their own groceries at the grocery store.
Yeah.
They don't pump their own car gas. They got people doing shit for them.
Yeah. Especially at that level, you know.
They have no concept of, I think I'll buy me a Bentley today. I heard something about like one of those damn Kardashian girls might be worth close to $1 billion.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like,
well, they do all kinds of like makeup and clothes.
But still,
and stuff.
Like, do they deserve it? What, I mean, come on. I mean, They're just, they're famous.
Well,
famous because they live in Hollywood and they're.
They're like the probably the ultimate example of just literally just celebrity for
no good reason, for no talent. You've been reading comics a long time, since the early 70s, whatever, and mostly superhero, sci-fi, fantasy, blah blah. Probably around about 2000, I started branching out, started reading more like non-mainstream stuff, like Drawn and Quarterly, Fantagraphics, things like that. Biographical, stuff like Harvey Pekar, R. Crumb, Chris Ware, you know, the oddball stuff, Chester Brown, Joe Matt, and that kind of thing. And, you know, those I got kind of on that tangent. And then I started reading up on, you know, people that actually did books for Drawn and Quarterly in the early days. Various people they had, like Adrian Tomine, Seth, and those guys. And a name came up that I kept seeing, but I didn't really know anything about her. It's Julie Dossay. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. Dossay. Anyways, she was also one of those ground floor people who worked early on at Drawn and Quarterly. The only female, I believe, out of all those guys that were that did their own like autobiographical stories. And I never had read any of her material, but a few months back, Drawn and Quarterly had reoffered her book called My New York Diary that she wrote and drew. Now, she wrote and drew this, and this is an old book, but they've re-released it. It's a true story by her that starts in, I want to say, 93, June of 83. It's got a flashback, but I think most of it actually takes place in the 90s. But there is a flashback of like 83, the very first of it. But it's her autobiographical, written and drawn story of her growing up in Montreal, I do believe, Quebec, and then she moves to New York City to be an artist and moves away from pretty much everybody she knows. She finds somebody she knows in New York City has an apartment, and they invite her to come down and share the rent and live in this apartment with her. Now, her apartment is, I'm going to try to figure out, I didn't write the name down here, but I think it's in Washington Heights. Have you ever heard of Washington Heights?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Washington Heights, from what I know, is far north, like more north than Harlem. It's pretty far up there. Does that sound right to you? Pretty close?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty far north from what she talks about in the book. I think it's pretty far north, like further north than Harlem. Like, she lives way up in Manhattan. But anyways, she moves there, and it's a guy that has this apartment, and he's also an artist. So they're both kind of like, I wouldn't say like on the same level, like they're both like, you know, they're out of high school, early 20s, they're pretty inexperienced, but they're both doing art. And she moves in with this guy. She leaves all of her friends and family in Montreal, moves to New York City. She always wanted to go there, moves in with this guy that she kind of barely knows. And he shows around the apartment, and the whole part of the book, and this is like in the 90s, the whole part of the first part of the book is her kind of getting used to living in this apartment with this guy that is tiny. I mean, like, it's like living room. Like, when you first walk in the door, it's like living room, kitchen, it's all there. The bedroom is only a bedroom because it's off to the side. There's no wall separating it.
Michelle and I rented an apartment when we stayed in New York one time on vacation. And literally, you walked in to the kitchen, and the kitchen was probably 7x7. There was a little table, like a two-person table, under a window that had the fire escape. Then you went in the door right there, and the door was even at an angle. So you went in, if you did an immediate left, you were in the bathroom.
But it had a door on it.
It did have a door on it. The bathroom had a door, and the apartment had a door. But if you...
That was the only door in the apartment, too, right?
Yes. You could sit on the toilet and put your feet in the shower.
Oh, my God.
That's how... Yeah. Anyway, so then, from there, you went, and there was... You walked about 2 feet, and there was a alcove that had a curtain, and that was the closet.
Yeah.
The only storage in the apartment. Through there, there was an area, there was a bed that was in the corner, and this whole thing was probably like 10 foot wide, maybe. And it went length back. So, like, you came in the kitchen there, then you went back, there was a bed. At the foot of the bed, there was like a love seat, and then over on this side, on the left side, there was a desk, and that was it, dude. And yeah. I think Michelle looked on Zillow, and that thing rented for like $3,000 a month or something, between 25 and three.
Oh, man.
It was $3,000. Yeah, and I mean it was on but the upper west side. Well,
I was gonna say it's further south than what this is.
Long ways further south.
This is way. In fact, at one point she talks about if she wants to go down to, like, the good part of New York City, whatever that would be, Chelsea or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like a 45-minute subway ride.
Oh, I believe it, from where she's at. I looked it up, and it is north of
Harlem,
yeah.
Yeah, so when she gets there, it's like I said, it's like one big room except, well, not big, but one room except for the bathroom, I think, is separate. And then, like, kitchen, living room is kind of together. Then there might be some beads, and inside the beads is, like, the bed, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And like, I think she was going to sleep on the couch, or I forgot what the plan was, but the guy had the bed. I don't remember exactly, but anyway, the whole thing was like, oh, yeah, it was like him and her. They might have had a cat, and there's a ton of cockroaches all over the place, just cockroach city. And when she first gets there, like, she noticed when she walks in the building, you know, like, somebody had broke the mail slot thing, so all the mail's exposed. Anybody can just get anybody else's mail they want. The stairs are rickety, that kind of thing. They're up a few flights or whatever. The mail is so bad, they had to just have the mail at the post office. And, you know, walking to get the mail, even though it was like a block or two away, was like considered dangerous because of how rough this neighborhood is. People were throwing, like, trash bags out their windows onto the street. People were pissing on the street. Just, you know, it's really rough, terrible neighborhood. Like, the train was coming by, elevated train, I think, up there.
Oh,
something
yeah.
like that, like, noisy. And just, you can kind of get an idea of, like, you know, what it was like there. Like, terrible, right?
Yes.
Well, anyways, they don't really have jobs. Like, all they do is they work on their art and they do drugs. Like, and she wasn't used to doing drugs. And you find out at one point she's doing these drugs with this guy and drinking, like, really heavily. And starts doing these drugs with this guy, and she starts having, like, epileptic seizures. And you find out that, like, she had epilepsy when she left her house, but it was controlled because of the medication she was on. But now that she's doing, like, huffing and drugs and drinking all the time, like, it was messing her whatever up. And so she would have seizures and stuff. And then this guy ended up becoming sort of her boyfriend. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, I think you need to get off the drugs. The drugs are the problem. And she's like, no, I've been on the drugs. And just, you know, stuff like that's going on in her life. And she's trying to, she wants to live there, but this guy may not be the best person to live with. And like I said, becomes her boyfriend after a while. But he's like a bad, really bad influence. And her art, though, this is where I was going with this. They're kind of on the same level, but her art starts kind of taking off, and his really does it. Like, she meets some people and gets some people like, oh, yeah, we could probably publish your work in this or whatever, and gets her work out in some small little things, which gets her more eyes on her work. And then eventually, I want to say, like, it wasn't the New Yorker, I don't think, but, like, a pretty prominent magazine wants to put one of her stories in there. Like some artwork or whatever. They commissioned her to do something. And so, like, that puts her up even on a bigger level because that nobody really gets that kind of a deal hardly.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, a real professional. And so this guy starts feeling kind of, like, inadequate and also jealous. because she's really kind of moving up, and he isn't moving up at all. He's pretty much staying where he's at art-wise. Well, then, you know, he's always trying to get her to, like, hey, today, let's just watch TV. And, like, you know, they can't afford cable, so they're watching, like, basic TV, and it's just, like, crap on TV. And they'll just sit around and, like, do drugs and just waste the whole day and not really do anything. And then she feels guilty for not doing her art or whatever. And the whole book is kind of like that, just like her diary of what's going on. And like, she'll skip like big sections of dates, and then there'll be like an 8 or 20 page story of like what's going on here. Then the dates will move forward further. And it's just like her early time in New York City with this guy until she finally is able to leave him. And he gives her a big guilt trip about leaving him. And then at one point she sees him later on, like not that much later on, and he's already got another girlfriend. He's already like, he's giving her a bunch of guilt trip, like, oh, you know, I can't make it without you, blah, blah. And then later on, like not very, you know, like a few months later, he's got a new girl. He's already got the same thing. He's working the same thing out with this new girl, like trying to get her to work and him just sitting around not doing much. But anyways, it talks about like when she loses her virginity the first time, and she can't wait to get it over with, not with this guy, but with somebody else. And then at one point, this one boyfriend that she's got knocks her up, and she has a miscarriage, and it's all in here. It's something else. I mean, her whole, and the people she's hanging out with, and what she, I mean, it's crazy. Occasionally she'd go back to Montreal and see people, but then go right back down there. And eventually she did leave New York City, and I forgot where she moved to, maybe Washington State or something. But this is her whole, I want to say, journey in New York City. And it is not glamorous. It is it's rough where she's living out and everything. But, you know, it's her experience of New York City.
I read this, but this doesn't look familiar.
I dug it. Her artwork.
Her name seems familiar, but I don't. Her art doesn't look familiar to me at all.
If you read a lot of Drawn and Quarterly or read about their company, she was on the ground floor with like when they toured and they went, they took some of their artists out. She was like part of that initial group of artists from their company. She's got a cartoony style. She kind of draws the people with kind of a like stick body sort of, but like big heads. It's different. I like it. It's pretty effective for what she does, being the fact that it's autobiographical and that kind of thing. I don't think people would really hire her to do work for their books, but for what she does, I think it's effective. Black and white, no color. And this is from there's the little bit from the 80s when she lost her virginity, but the rest of it is, I would say 9/10 of the book is just the New York City experience for about like maybe the better part of a year. So that is in the 90s. So she's done 30 more years worth of work, I'm guessing. I know she's been around, but I haven't really seen anything else that I've ran across. It's the kind of thing that for a while I was reading quite a bit of this I don't want to say slice of life, but kind of slice of life, autobiographical for sure.
Yeah, her art style reminds me of what's his name? Burns?
Charles Burns?
Charles Burns. But, oh, there's a map of Washington Heights.
Oh, does it show where it's at?
Yeah, it shows where it's at there.
Like it reminds 5 me miles Charles north of Harlem or something crazy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be 5 miles. You would think the whole island's like 5 miles long.
Here she's lounging in bed naked, and like her roommate, I guess it's her roommate, like all of a sudden like takes a picture of her.
Oh yeah, that comes up because he takes a picture of her, a couple of them actually, and he saves them in the drawer. And when she's trying to get break away from him, she finds them and she takes them. And at one point she tells him, hey, I'm going to break up with you. He goes to the drawer and goes, hey, I'll just keep these photos. He's like, where'd they go? And he knew that she had like taken them back or whatever. She had
taken the photos. It reminds me of Charles Burns. I say that only because it has a lot of black in it.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's no, it's not. Charles Burns is a lot more he's polished style.
Right, he's a better inker and everything else. But I mean, but you think about it, she was doing this when
It's about the story kind of thing.
Yeah, she was doing this probably when she was like in her early 20s. So, I think it's pretty effective for how young she was when she was doing it.
They published it, and you bought it, so.
Oh, yeah. So
just out of curiosity, was that an expensive book? The cover is weird, because it's not slick.
It's French flapped, and yeah.
It's got French flaps on it.
I think it was about maybe $15, and I maybe paid about $10 for it.
Okay. Something that's like a pretty good.
Oh, here it is, $16.95. I think I paid maybe like $8 or $10 for it, yeah.
For comics nowadays, that's a lot of story for $10. Even for 16, I mean, that's a reasonable. I mean, I don't know how many pages it is. It's black and white, but it's.
I like the size of this. I like the format. If it would have been thicker, it would have been nicer, but this is like her one little snapshot of that, you know, and this is, you know, this is the complete story, so I dig it. Once again, it's called My New York Diary by Julie Desay. I believe that's pronounced Desay. She's French. Oh, it also talks about, like, you know, a little bit of her French speaking versus English. You know, all that's in here too. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know. If somebody bought that, just flipping through it, I feel like it would take you a while to read it. It's not a comic you buy and read in one setting.
No, it's kind of wordy too. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it, and it's like her personal memoir and that kind of thing. You'd have to be up for that. That's not for everybody. There is a fair amount of nudity in it, and there's adult themes in it for sure. A lot of drug use, drinking, and that kind of thing. But
I not for the kiddies.
No. You know, we're at about an hour. You want to call us an episode?
Let's wrap it up, man.
Wrap it up, as the Thunderbirds used to always say. Wrap it up. So, as always, I've been your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Definitely come back next week for another all-new episode. Check out our blog at betterthanfictionthepodcast.blogspot.com, where I will post some photos, of course, of what we've talked about tonight.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. This will help other people find the podcast and enjoy it as much as you do.
Hey, one thing I want to say, and you don't know this, but the link is broken in Facebook to upload about the episodes in Facebook. So all the downloads we're getting are just from people who pick us up on wherever. They're not getting the, hey, it's the new ones are up on Facebook. And I asked our Podomatic is who hosts us.
Yeah.
And I emailed them saying, hey, I can't post through Facebook anymore. And they're saying, yeah, they redid something and it broke the link and we haven't got it fixed yet. And they said, oh, there's some rigmarole you can do to fix it. I couldn't figure out exactly what they're talking about. Like a manual, whatever.
Yeah, go in here and...
Yeah, do this and this and you can do this. And I was like, oh, brother. But yeah, so probably for the last month or more, I haven't been able to post us through Facebook. So, hey, if you're listening, welcome. If you're finding us, however you're finding us, I appreciate it. But yeah, we're not getting the usual Facebook bump that we were getting. But I'll try and figure that out going forward. But welcome, and thanks for sticking around. And with that, we'll say, hey, see you next week. And we're out.